after Hannes Böll, a famous German writer, peace activist, and Nobel Prize winner. Hannes Böll believed in and promotion of citizen participation in politics is the model for the foundation's work. In South Africa, we seek to support the work of the parliamentary committee because there really is a reason for them to be called the engine rooms of parliament. The work of the committee is crucial for the vibrant South African democracy. Because gender equity is one of our fundamental concerns, we believe that it is extremely important for parliament to be responsive to the concerns of women and address the challenges they face in their daily lives. For this reason, earlier this year, we approached the then chair of the portfolio committee, Mrs. Barbara Thompson, with the offer of bringing resources to the committee of women, children, youth, and persons with disability. Mrs. Thompson and the Honorable Maha, who we are very happy is with us today, even though she changed her portfolio, advised that discussions on gender responsive budgeting would be a benefit to the committee. Efforts to make women's concerns more visible in Parliament. Honourable Chair Mabe, who I'm also pleased to have with us here today, was also extremely supportive of this initiative. Indeed, South Africa is a world leader when it comes to gender responsive budgeting. South Africa's Women's Budget Initiative, which was an initiative of the South African Parliament with civil society, serves as best case practice model worldwide. I hope that the discussions we have today can build on the legacy of this excellent initiative. I should add that our facilitator here today, Mrs. Debbie Butlander, is a veteran of the Women's Budget Initiative. She's also the editor of this book that you may know, and I think this is very fortunate that we have her here today. Today's discussion will lay the foundation for further engagement during the next year's budget deliberation, where the underpinning questions will be around allocation. In general, the foundation where for this, however, our engagement today will focus on budget from the perspective of what does the budget buy? What does it buy with regards to men and women and with regards to a program for greater gender equity? The question, what does the budget buy, is one of the most difficult questions that parliamentarians have to seek answers for. Public spending must be evaluated on the basis of what social and service delivery outcomes it achieves, not on the basis of how much it spends. To ask this question from a gender perspective is an even more challenging but important question. I hope that today's workshop is fruitful and meaningfully contributes to the important work that you do in this regard, and I hope that we can support your efforts to amplify women's voices throughout the parliamentary. Before I hand over to Debbie, I would like to thank Ms. Siki Moya and Karen Dante for organizing this work. Thank you very much. And I would like to tell you that if you would like to know more about our work in Parliament, you can chat to Karen, or our work on women's rights, you can chat to Nomi Tandu, who sits over there. Wait. Maybe a break. But now I would like to hand over to Debbie. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here. I have worked with some of your predecessor committees, but this is the first time that you've got an even put another long name, because it used to have an equally long name, but different words. I think if we can just start by going around, I know that you all know that, but we don't know you. So if you could just go around and say what your position is, and your name, obviously, and what your position is, and also just briefly, if you have been exposed to any ideas of gender-responsive budgeting, if you have attended previous workshop or anything, it would be useful to know. So, you can start on that.
I'm Patty Duncan. I'm a member of Parliament, and also a member of the Portfolio Committee on Women, Youth, Children with Disability. And I represent the Manchester Alliance. And then maybe just to say something that I feel is important, which I raised in the Portfolio Committee right from the beginning. I think we were just going for at least 3 months when I suggested after getting budget so that we can see how much they budget for women, how much they budget for youth, and also those with disability as well as children. Up till now, we have not received it yet. So there's a bit of a lack of commitment from the department. But since you are, I have raised that because we will not be able to really you know, have a proper outcome if we don't budget for these sectors from government. Thank you.
My name is Kiki Kotkola. I'm a member of the portfolio committee and I'm a representative of COP. My expectations are so far the workshop is we have been struggling with the budget as well as the ministry because of the money for the ministry. And the budget that was allocated statistically spread out from 3 years to 156 million. And looking at the challenges, and I think what is important that we possibly achieve the community where we have this ministry is the total emancipation of women. And when we talk about total emancipation, we cannot leave out economy. We want women to be independent so that they are able to fend for themselves. But regarding the budget that is allocated there, it is impossible. We are still far away from that. And South Africa used to be the leading in the whole world teaching on gender issues and that subject as a whole. But something is missing to the end, but something that is not going right. And South Africa is no longer as it was previous years. And I think as this committee, it is important that we revise that security as well. And as you know that we are, every year we are at the time of the year as well going to continue on 6 days this year, the 16 days of 18 days. We think that women will never be liberated on the violence until women are liberated economically, and we are not supporting each other. So those are the expectations that I have out of this workshop, that as from next year, we as a community should operate differently. We should bring hope to the women of South Africa.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Olivia Makati. I'm a member of parliament in the Portuguese community for tourism. But I was part of this community for a long time when it was at your age. So we used to come and get and make the workshop. My interest, the reason why I'm here, is because I'm elite in terms of women's issues. Of which I find it attractive for me to say that the budget that is allocated to women, and persons with disabilities is the budget that will change the life of women. So I want to be part of those who are monitoring that is impact in terms of women's issues, because without the liberation of women, we are nothing. As I'm speaking here in the Western Cape, in the last week, in the one place in London, two women were killed. The one was killed by the husband, the one the boyfriend, the one the boyfriend, you know. All those things, it is because it is that we are not independent. Men think that we still depend on them. So therefore then we need to stipulate that we change that perception and put it in perspective. We can only do that then if we have enough resources to reduce this issue. Because then other people don't have anything to lean on. They lean on this husband, which at the end of the day they think that they're lost. So that is why I'm here today. Even not part of this problem. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
I'm Cinda Tedelo. I'm a member of Parliament. I'm in the Women, Children, and People with Disabilities Committee. I think the modules of
that there's a bomb, it's going to be an eye-opener for not only the portfolio committee that I'm in, but in all the departments. Because as women, I would like to say that we're all scattered in all the departments. And but you know what the budget means, what the budget is for, then that's a lot.
Morning, I'm Lynn Manish, Thursday, Ramadizel, a member of the portfolio committee.
Yes.
Yes. Also a newly appointed chair. Chairperson. I was very excited to go on. You took this decision to have the, you know, this generous member of the committee taking place. You know, for you to have power, you must have, you cannot have power without power. It's good to talk about political freedom, but if you don't have economic freedom, then it's just as not having that, you know, freedom. As leaders here, you know who represents women and who are here to liberate women. Although they are, we say they are liberated, but they are, we still have to emancipate them. It is important for us to be empowered so that we also are able, when we look at the budget, because when we talk about it, we're not talking about numbers. Budget is not only about numbers, but we must be able to look at it with gender eyes so that we are able, you know, to put it into this proper perspective. Today, when we are in this 16 days, you know, of activism, most women who are being abused, especially in marriage, it's because economically, they are not independent. So that is the reason why they continue staying in the region. So as to, you know, be supported by the parties. And I think I want to end up here. We'll talk more about
it. Sure. We will talk a lot more.
Okay.
My name is Joseph Lam. I'm a member of this committee, the Committee on Women and People with Disabilities. Very lonely man, I'm honest. I'm happy that we have this kind of a budget today, workshop today, to try and address a number of things my colleagues have already mentioned. But more importantly, one notes that there is a bigger struggle in South Africa. Not in Parliament. The struggle is not in Parliament. Necessary laws in Parliament get made and get passed. Not in government. The people in government understand the rationale behind the constitutional opening phrase of the aim to build a non-racial, non-sexist, prosperous nation. That is well understood at that level. But it is more interestingly that the issue of gender is still inside the society. It's inside the society in that men see themselves as different people from women, girls different people from boys, and so on, girls from childhood, and so on. So it is so deep-rooted, and that is our biggest challenge. Now, within this biggest challenge, you find tendencies of power play. Patriarchy versus matriarchy. tendency on the side of men. They want to become the dominant. You find matriarchal tendencies in the struggle of women for their emancipation. That it appears some look at this emancipation meaning freedom from men. But you see, between the two extreme lines, our major struggle is to find the balance, the gender balance, where you have men and women accepting each other. That's important. Once we can achieve that, we shall have done quite a lot. I realize that this workshop will focus at the budget. Budget as a tool can address that particular problem. But I should think budget is one of the many. There are a number of other areas that need to deal with that. But among others, in my sleepless night sometimes in thinking about where we can find the solution, something crosses my mind that it is the people with disability who say, nothing for us, to us, without us. Maybe that concept must not be narrowly put into a silo, but it must be a concept that we look at broadly as a concept that can address the society problem in various facets. For us to adopt a campaign like we have campaigned and we will be moving again this year into the 16 days of activism, tell men how much they are rapists, how much they are doing these things, without involving them in the campaign to stop them, those offenses, is not very much a success. I think we need to develop a strategy through which we can get men to get involved and men to take the lead in ensuring that they stop this person. To me, I think for them, to them, with them, it will take us some. Thank you.
Thank you. I think you need to be a bit shorter, but I'm going to combine this and the next session, so we do not need to worry too much about that.
I'm Kira, and I'm the program manager for the Hunger School. And I've been involved with Antonia and former colleague Paola Tsubishi and new colleague Nova Kando. I've been having many conversations with the custodial committee and others staff of prominence about having workshops and having this intervention. So I'm very keen. We are all here today, and I hope that it will be very successful and useful for you. And I just wanted to add a thank you to Joy Watson and the other researchers, Gary and Crystal and Shiva, who's not here, for their support in bringing this up. And Nadine Swan.
Thank you.
So my name is Nancy Chimoya. I'm currently with HBS and I'm a public policy master at the UCT.
Morning everybody, I'm Joy Watson. I am a senior researcher for documenting research of Friday and the Senate Committee on the Children.
Good day, I'm
Clark
Lieutenant.
I'm Shinaz and I'm currently co-education. Bad.
I'm Benita Wallman and I'm doing research with Pine Equal at the moment, working with democracy.
I'm Krista Levendel, I'm one of the researchers for the Portfolio Committee.
I'm Waven and I'm with PMG.
Morning everybody, I'm Daphne Matthews, I'm a researcher for the Select Committee on Women, Children with Disability. My focus is on children and disabled disability.
Good morning everyone, my name is Peace Marbury, I'm the Select Chairperson of the committee for the NCOP. I think I'll just want to formally apologize for other members from the NCOP, they are unable to join us because of the facility medicine and the deal with legislation. And for me, I think gender cuts across all aspects. So I'm excited and ready to learn.
My name is Princess Maduna. I represent ANC. In short, because I don't have to repeat what the other members have said, I still feel as women we are not yet liberated. It's 16 days of activism, and really we are still very, very far from reaching everything we want to do. So I'm really looking forward to today, actually, and we cannot have power actually without any resources, like what my chairman said. But my main focus is actually me with persons with disabilities, because I've got a child who's very disabled, so I know it from myself how difficult it is. Good morning. I'm of Doha, and I'm a class member of the community. And I think I get a class. And in my work, because I've been employed as the chairperson of my education, and I wouldn't have to speak too long, but when you look at education itself, education shapes the mind. It shapes the mind of the children, and those children become adults. And I think when it comes to gender itself, I believe that we must mainstream. Otherwise, I would not be here today. And when you look at education itself, the shortcomings, you know, the better part of teachers, they occupy the lower position in the teaching board. You never really found any senior positions or principles, but things changed, but to what extent? And they were in education too, to help the girls. We had the girls' education movement, but the boys' education movement was brought in just for that balance too. And you look at the subject too, because I was a victim of the system, because like I had to go into nursing for teaching, and I was a teacher. And when it comes to the girls, they normally don't do math or science, but I do have the LAD program within education. And I think when it comes to my community, I would have to look at things to a gender lens. Because majority, if you get a majority of that department, like us, are women. And I'd like to check in, and I believe in this lesson what our past president said. He said that women, South Africa will never be free unless women are liberated. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Denise Washington, member of the portfolio committee and representing the DA. So I'm chatting. I would love to be able to implement more, but I think within this committee that we've actually got a good understanding. We don't play politics, and I think we need to do more of that, working together as women to try and solve the problems that we have. I agree with my colleague that education is absolutely vital, but I also believe that we need to strengthen our families, and we need to strengthen the role of women within the family, because it is still the hand that rocks the cradle that rules the world, that there should be more of us ruling the world. I agree with my colleague as well that we need to involve men so that they don't feel sidelined and emasculated. And I think that's one of the reasons that you have so much violence, because men feel marginalized now, because there's always women and girls, and boys are saying, what about us? So the only power that they can exert is, in a sense, the physical power of abuse, and somehow we've got to get that mindset right. Our committee's role is so vast, we have a transversal role, but I don't think we're taken seriously. If you look at the amount of time given in Parliament to the little discussion or debate that we had in Parliament, I'm also really concerned about the amount of funding that we get. Consider what the National Health Development Agency has for their funding. And the top up of 29 million for a youth congress, we got a top up of 8 million. And we convey the message that we're going to learn here to be more explicit, I think it would be vital. But I'd also like to suggest that we get this sort of workshop presented to others besides ourselves. How about to the finance committee and, you know, the lecture and whatever, so that we can see that these ideas are really permeating, so that we're not just involved with tokenism. Thank you.
I am
Lisa Lindo-Werner
from the
Department
of Foundation and the Department of
Very general, and know that you can have those meetings
customer service?
Yeah.
I didn't pick up the same name.
Badlen.
Badlen.
BUDLENCER.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody sent me an email the other day and they spelled Chester and I came as Debbie Schlander. Okay. If you have questions, stop and ask, or if you have comments. GRB, just to say, I use the term gender responsive budgeting. People often say gender budget. People say women's budget. People use a whole, some people say gender sensitive budgeting. I think the technically correct term is probably gender responsive budgeting. We use women's budget for when we started the initiative in the 1990s because English is the only one of our 11 languages that has a word for gender. And we were wanting people to understand what we spoke about. So to have gender, we thought would just confuse people. And in essence, gender is about the relationship between male and female. But in that relationship, 95% of the time, it is women who are disadvantaged. The woman's budget is a little crude, but it gives the message. The GRB analyzes the government's budget for its impact on women and men, girls and boys. People often just say women and men, and I like to put in the girls and boys because about half of our population are not women and men, they're girls and boys. As somebody said, what happens when you are a child shapes, especially for gender, what you will be and what you will think and how you will act. Where you are an adult. So the girls and boys is particularly important, and obviously for this committee, given that it's one of your issues, we put it in. Ideally, GRB goes beyond simple male-female to look at location, so that would be urban-rural, or it would be Western Cape and Gauteng versus Eastern Cape and Limpopo. It would be Central Cape Town versus out in informal settlement. All of those issues are about location. And women here have a very different situation from those in other locations. Age, ethnicity or race, and class, rich and poor. And I think people talking about unless women have resources, unless women have economics, that's bringing in the class element. In fact, for this workshop, for the practical work, we're going to use the Department of Labor. So I was very pleased that all of you spoke about economics, because I didn't want to take education or health. That is the word. It's like, you know, educate women and the problems will be solved. South Africa has more women than men at universities. Our problems aren't solved. So it's very simplistic to say educate women and the problems will be solved. Okay, GRB is a type of policy analysis that goes beyond the words that are written on paper. So when we started this at 95, we just had our democracy revolution, whatever you want to call it. We had wonderful interim constitution and even better constitution in the making. We had all the departments starting to develop wonderful new policies that promised heaven on earth. And our question became, we don't have the money to be able to do all this. And when we start actually giving money for these policies, what is going to fall off the table? Is it the gender part of it that are going to fall off the table? So the question behind the women's budget was, how do we ensure that the good paper becomes good activities by government and good outcomes? So we wanted to check that the money is allocated to implement the work, to check that the money is spent as it was allocated, because when you pass the budget, you're just allocating, you're not spending it. And there was something in the newspaper yesterday saying if we look across all the provinces, capital expenditure, they're underspending very badly. By the middle of the year, they spent about 33%. What's happening? Check who the money reaches. If we're going to have employment schemes, is it women or is it men? Is it rural or is it urban? Who's employed on this? And check whether the money changes the bad gender patterns in society. Because sometimes we make policies that we think will change things, but they don't. So in that case, allocating money is not enough. You've got to change the policy. And then you said budget is not the only thing, but we say budget is the most important policy of government, because without money, no other policy will work. Now that is controversial, because some people say, well, what about the constitution? Well, without money, the constitution won't work either. So at a very crude level, the budget is completely fundamental. Okay, and then what GLB is not, and this is common misperception. Firstly, it's not about separate budgets for women, men, girls, and boys. And so that means it's not about the budget for the departments of women, children, and people with disabilities. If we think that is a gender response budget, we eating the crumbs while somebody else eats the cake. And it also, to take up the first point, it also means it's very difficult to say to a department, what are you advocating for women? Because usually they won't be advocating separately, and we don't particularly want them to advocate separately. We want them to allocate for activities that are going to assist women, and we want them to tell us how many women did they reach compared to how many men. Just a little anecdote is that when we brought out the first book like this, one of the people, at that stage, the government budget was very much old-fashioned. It was just a whole lot of numbers. Headings, numbers. And one of the people in Treasury said, this is not budget analysis. There are very few numbers and there are too many words. What is interesting is that if you now look at our budget book that was produced by National Treasury, there are far more words than there are numbers. And our budget books in South Africa are regarded as state of the art. We really are regarded as having among the best budgeting approach in terms of transparency and everything. The budget has to be, as somebody said, about words as well as numbers. So, guidelines. GRB is not about setting aside X percent for gender or woman. So in Philippines, they also started in about 1995, and they had a law that they passed that said that every single government agency, so every department or ministry or local government, must allocate 5% of its budget as a gender budget, or gender and development budget. Their idea was that 5% must kickstart gender and development. The problem was most agencies didn't even use the 5%. Second problem was that if they gave the 5%, they said, we've done gender, the rest of the 95% goes on as usual. The third problem was they gave the 5% for some very, very odd things, one of the funniest is that they one person gave it for ballroom dancing classes for their female civil servants. And they said, that is our gender budget. And I went back a few years later and I was doing a workshop and I gave that example. And they said, no, we don't do that anymore. Now we give it for aerobics classes, not for... But, okay, there are people now in the Philippines who are realizing the 5% is a mistake. And we must ask, what about the 95%? But there are others who still get attracted to the 1%. So you have the United Nations Development Program in their post-conflict program, and they say you must give 15% of the budget for gender. And they're beginning to realize that doesn't make any sense. Different countries have different problems. So I would just, let's look at the budget, not talk about percentages, but see is what is being done sensible and does it meet the needs. We're not talking about money for women counselors to control. So that's in, not in South Africa, but in quite a lot of other countries, particularly in Africa. At local government level, every counselor will get money. Money that goes almost into their pockets and that they then spend on the community. And in some of these countries, they didn't used to give it to the women. Or in some of the countries, they gave bicycles to the men, but not to the women. There was outright discrimination there. And some countries focused on, we want equal money or we want sewing machines for women counselors. That's not what we're talking about here. We are not talking about money for the elite women. We are talking about what can we do for women at the bottom. And that links with me looking at gender at the same time as class, as location, as everything else. And South Africa, I think you will all understand what's said when I say as a white woman, as somebody who came from a middle class background, somebody who grew up under apartheid as a white person, my needs should not be satisfied by government and the needs of a black rural man. Can't just look at gender without looking at all the other things together. Because the government should be helping those who are least able themselves. It's not about 50% male, 50% female for every expenditure. The most obvious example is health. Both women and men get tonsillitis. Both women and men get flu, both women and men can get malaria, both women and men can get HIV/AIDS, but more women than men get HIV/AIDS. But the big difference is women's bodies are sterile. Women's bodies are more complicated. And that means that women need more health services on average than men. So if you look at who is served by the public health services, and we found it was 50-50, it would be inequitable. It would be equal, but inequitable because it would not be in proportion to the need. And we might be able to find some other examples that go in the opposite direction, but 50% is a good starting point, but don't just accept it without asking. And then this last one is not only about women's needs. And this is that whole debate about practical versus strategic needs. It's not just about let's have childcare because that will, because women need it. But it's what will the childcare do to change the situation of women and men. In fact, I would argue childcare can do quite a lot to bring women up to work. But it's going beyond just me. Oh. You need some water. Yeah. Okay, then there's unpaid care work.
I wish we could either when we finish, but I would like us to come back to this. Mm-hmm.
because I think this is where the key lies. For us to, and to, for us to, because I have such a lot on my mind, you know, you going through this knot, one point. The second bullet point, where you say, not about taking aside X percent for gender women. Within the gender framework, we tend to always look at gender, then women. Gender is not about women. Gender is about men and women. So when you mainstream gender, it's going to be about both. But what we have to keep in mind, it's the same thing as when we talk about race, for instance. These are two very sensitive topics, race and gender. Who are disadvantaged?
Yeah.
Women. And women have been disadvantaged since the beginning of time. They've been disadvantaged. Now, when we have all these numbers, when are we going to try and sort of talk about the equality between men and women? So I think that I would really like us maybe to, when we finish or start going through this day, that we come back to the knot for this and not that we can be able to see what is it, how are we going to address the fact that women in this country do not have the right to say as yet in every regard. Basically, my understanding is that in South Africa, we are blessed with a very, very good constitution. Our constitution is not about simple 50-50 equality. Our constitution is about what Winnie Jadwala thought we were, substantive equality, rather than formal equality. Formal equality says we must treat everybody the same. Substantive equality says we must treat everybody in a way that will get them to the same finishing point. Formal equality is about equality of opportunity at the starting point. Substantive equality is about equality at the ending point. And I use this little example of you have two men, they are starting a race. The one has a t-shirt on his back, and the other has a child of 2 years old on his back. And you say, ready, steady, go, and they start running, and who is likely to win?
The one with the t-shirt.
Now, you've given them equal opportunity. They started at the same time, they must run the same length, but they are in a different situation. Now, for me, I mean, it's obvious. Not usually the man with the baby on his back. Okay.
So can I suggest that we call human?
Yes.
Because according to this, after the presentation, so we
okay, there will be a discussion. Okay.
I'm just afraid that we can start this one. And then
okay. Well, let me just finish my little story on this, then I'll go on. But the whole thing with the point I was going to make is that there's some inequalities between women and men that we can get rid of. The fact that women didn't go to school and all the rest of it. There we can solve the problem for 50-50 thing. There are other differences between women and men that will never go away. Because women will always be disadvantaged, or they will always be placed in a different situation to women than to men because they have babies. And the whole story is how can we have policies that don't punish women for their differences. And I think one could make, we often make the based on affirmative action. Affirmative action for men, for black and white, for black, will not be necessary forever, but we've got to get over the discrimination of the past. Affirmative action will come some other name in terms of male, female, or different treatment will always be necessary because we will never be the same. Maybe we don't call it affirmative, but I think that it's just, we are not talking about then people say, oh, you're getting relative, cultural relativism, and, you know, must women wear a veil and all the rest of it, but I think we need to recognize that there are differences. Okay, and my next slide is in fact about the differences. So gender and GRB are also about new concepts such as unpaid care work. Unpaid care work is a term we use for housework, cooking, caring for kids, aged and sick people, when it is done by people in their own homes and for no money. The system of national accounts is what was set up by the World Bank and OECD and all the rest of them, and the rules for calculating GDP, gross domestic product. Now, everybody, when they say, oh, you come from South Africa, what is it? You know, that determines how wealthy they think we are. There's the other question of distribution, but, you know, there's a general thing of you are a middle-income country. The SNA rules say that unpaid care work, that housework is work, even though it is not counted in GDP. So there's an illogicality in the SNA that says we recognize this as work, but it's too complicated for us clever people to count, so we're not going to include it in GDP. And my argument is that because it is not in GDP, it is unseen and undervalued. Because it is not in GDP, it is unseen and undervalued. So people think, well, we don't have to do anything to see that it's easy for people to do housework. Why should we provide tap water? Why should we provide electricity? There are women there who can do the work. I mean, there's another funny story I can tell, which is there's a man and he has a housekeeper. And his housekeeper cooks for him and she cleans for him and she shops for him. And he pays her a wage. Mm. And that wage is part of the GDP because it is a wage. Mm. And then the man gets clever and he falls in love with her and he marries her. And she continues to cook and to clean and she shops for him. She provides some other services. Mm. But she gets no wage and the GDP falls. Unpaid care work is not done, society will be less efficient, less less healthy and less happy. If government does not deliver health or care services, women in the household do so instead. So with HIV/AIDS, it was recognized to some extent, and then we set up all the home-based care. And that's where we claim the not costly. So they do not get a nurse's salary, but they get a stipend if they are lucky. So there's a sort of, yes, we can't afford to give it in the hospital. We have to get rid of these people. So we send them back to the home, and then we'll send somebody to visit them and pay that person a little bit. And this is not only South Africa. In developed countries, they are also trying to get people out of the hospitals quickly. So they are paying the hospitals, this is a public health service, with an appendix, tuna, and then person's covered. If you keep them for 3 nights, you will only get refunded for the 2 nights. So there's an incentive for the hospital to get them out. Who is it who has to work the next day to look after the sick person? So it's just saying government policy can increase the burden of unpaid care work, or they can decrease the burden of, and for men, there was a very nice example in Barbados where they did a very small thing. They changed the opening hours of clinics, health clinics. So before they used to finish at 4 o'clock or something in the afternoon, they extended it until it went till 6, 7 o'clock at night in the evening. And the men started taking the sick children to the clinic, which they hadn't done before because the men were meant to be at work. The women were probably still cooking, but at least there was, like, just by changing the hours of the clinic, there was some redistribution of who did the work, who did the unpaid work of caring for people. Okay, then the three categories of GRB analysis, and we used these three categories when we started with these books. We stole them from Australia, which was the only country that had done this before. Okay. The first category is targeted gender-based expenditure. So that would include money for the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities. Or at least part of that budget is targeted gender-based expenditure. Has a label there saying this is for women. Some countries will have a women's health program. We've got some places there's a maternal health or maternal and child health. So that's targeted in some sense. Some countries where women are, girls are much further behind than in South Africa will have special education initiatives for girls. That money is targeted gender-based expenditure. If you look across countries and calculate, this type of expenditure will usually be less than 1% of the budget. And that is why I'm saying if you focus on this, you are focusing on the problem while other people eat the cake. The money is can be important as a form of affirmative action, but we must not focus on that and ignore the rest. The next category is equal employment expenditure on government employees. So there could be training for clerical officers or women managers, saying clerical officers are mainly women, they train them and try and get them promoted, or they're not enough women managers and the SMS. Call it in government, we want to get more women. Any money given for that would be category 2. Or if you say pay for credit facilities for civil service. Again, that money is usually either non-existent in the government budget or very tiny. But it is important to the extent that it can, public servants are among the privileged in our society. They might not think so, but if you look at the overall distribution of income in the society, civil servants are among those who are earning more. So we want women to have an equal opportunity to get those jobs and to be in the privileged workers as men do. South Africa, in fact, we're in a pretty good position, and I think it is about 50% is female. It's not all.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm making a very broad generality for those people that have jobs and regular jobs, and even those at the bottom are earning more than they would in similar jobs in the private sector. So I'm not saying that I agree. In fact, I will say I completely disagree with the inequalities in public within public servant pay. I'm from a trade union background. I would have it much more nearer to each other. I also don't agree with what people get in the public in the private sector. But what I'm saying is that even those at the bottom are advantaged by being in the public sector rather than in the private sector. And so we want women to have an equal chance to get those jobs that are relatively okay. And that has protection. I mean, if you're a public servant, you have pension, you have medical aid, you have everything else. Whereas a lot of other outsourced jobs, you've got nothing. You're casual, you're contract and all the rest of it. So, I'm not a big one for focusing on category two. Certainly, in the first year, we had a special chapter in our book because it was such a big issue then of the need to make the public servant the correct color and the correct gender balance. Now, on gender, we're actually doing pretty well. As I say, I think more than half overall of national and provincial public servants are women. Problem is, they're not so much at the top level. So at national, there's less women. There are the provinces and there's the nurses and the teachers. And the nurses and the teachers, I would argue, even with the OSD, are underpaid.
Mm-hmm.
And my argument why they are underpaid, because it's like unpaid care work.
Yeah.
Can't
mm-hmm.
be very skilled. Because the sort of work they do, teachers work with kids.
Mm-hmm.
Well, every woman works with kids. I mean, informal,
yes,
natural talent that they have.
Mm-hmm.
Nurses look after people. Whereas sick, well, women do that too all the time. They don't need training for that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
not very skilled.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what do you
mean by that? Let me come back to that. I'm throwing things out that you can discuss after. The most important category is general budget. The 98% that is over, what happens to the rest of the budget? The budget that is given for food, the budget that is given for hospitals, the budget that is given for more important than hospitals for the clinic. What happens for the money that is given for the money that is not given for the standard public works program?
Yes.
The money is not given, people are meant to take it out of their existing budget. What happens to the money that is given to tourism? And is that going to help? And I always used to give the example of adult education because at the time in 94 or 95, 20% of adult African men, women, had never been to school, compared to 14% of adult African men.
Mm-hmm.
That was a hell of a lot of men and a hell of a lot of women, but far more women than men. Only 1% of the education budget was given for adult literacy. And if you looked at who it was reaching, it was more men than women. So there was a problem. We now have Kalibude, and I think we're reaching more people, and it seems to be overwhelmingly women. So we've improved a bit, but it's probably still 1% of the budget. And then the contraceptive services, I use possibly for other countries, because there's an issue of, and this is, again, something that has to be debated. Who should you be focusing on for contraception? If you focus only on women, are you putting all the responsibility on men? On the other hand, if you say no, it's an equal responsibility, but the men don't take their responsibility, it's the woman who still ends up with the baby. So, you know, maybe there is a need for more emphasis on women, but we mustn't forget the men, and what is the correct balance there. In Pakistan, when we looked at the budget, the only part of the reproductive health budget that were underspent was for men, was the people who were meant to go out and talk to men, and also the men, so the vasectomy for men was drastically underspent, and the people going out to educate men was drastically underspent. And so that is about how much you do be spending on that versus how much you be spending on women.
Yeah.
government should do. This is what the question Parliament should think about.
No,
the question civil society should think about.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really saying when you think about the budget,
mm-hmm.
don't think only about February and March.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see in the annual report, in a sort of muddled, slightly muddled way, this is how they are thinking.
Mm-hmm.
The annual report, I think, is quite a difficult document. It's not organized in a very easy way. But underlying the annual report, there are these questions. And the annual report is particularly about step four. We've had the budget, who has it reached? What have we done? Okay. It's going on quite long. A rights-based approach. We need to believe in human rights. So GRB helps us assess government's commitment to women's rights, for example, human rights standards, domestic law, such as CEDAW, the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination against Women, or Beijing, or MDGs, although some people ask whether MDGs is really about rights or something else, but it's to see are we keeping to all of that. Identify existing gaps, obstructing attainment of women's rights and necessary intervention. So, is it that there's not enough money, or is it that there's another problem? And if there's another problem, what's not only money that solves it? Distinguish between budget policies that treat women as autonomous citizens and those that treat them as vulnerable groups, or reproduction tools, or development instruments. So sometimes, you know, that. And in a sense, your committee with women, children, people with disabilities runs the danger of let's put all the vulnerable groups together.
Mm.
Well, are women vulnerable?
Women
in South Africa, they are vulnerable in certain situations.
Mm.
But actually, the society is relying on them even more than in many other countries, given who is responsible for bringing up children. Shocking statistic of only 35% of South African children live with both their mother and father. 35%. And more than 40% live only with one, and the rest live with neither parent. I give that statistic in other countries, they look at me as if I'm mad. But it means that women are not vulnerable, women are actually the underpinning of our society. Women as reproduction tools, well, we better look after women because they produce the next generation. We don't really care about them, but we need them to be in a relatively good shape because otherwise that's a problem for children. And that was with the first that you must keep them as good reproduction tools, but also think of them as people. That was with the first antiretroviral thing, where yes, we'll give them prevention of mother to child transmission, ARV, but we won't then give them ARVs for themselves. So the kid won't die, the mother will. That doesn't make sense as a reproduction tool either. But it's about seeing the woman herself as good beyond the fact that she can bear babies. Okay. Development instruments, the World Bank produces statistics to say if you have gender equality, your GDP will grow faster. Now, maybe that's true, but that shouldn't be the reason we are believing in gender equality. Even if it's going to cost a bit of money, we should be working towards gender equality. Even if it's going to bring down our GDP, we should look at having gender equality. Because gender equality is something in its own right. And then there's ensure meaningful participation of all groups involved in budget policy making. So that's about Parliament. It's about Parliament having hearings, involving other people. It's saying it's not just a few people who sit and make policy. Okay, GRB initiatives are very diverse. And this is always a problem. People say to me, what is GRB? And it's a very difficult question to answer. Because it's a big basket of things. The access, it can be government-led, it can can be civil society led, it can be parliament led. At the moment, the Gauteng government is doing something inside, Western Cape government is doing something inside, it's getting a bit wobbly. So there is some government led. Civil society led and parliament led, we had it strongly in the late 90s, now not really there. But you find different examples across different countries. Focus, you can focus on the full budget, or you can focus on a selective sector. And I've heard people talking about violence a lot. No, let's come on to that for the next one. So we could focus and just say, we believe education is the answer that we're in focus. Focus could be a sector, such as health, or a problem such as gender-based violence. If you choose health, you may be focusing on a certain department, with a complication of stop prevention as well. If you focus on gender-based violence, you're focusing on bits of a whole lot of different departments. Because you've got to get justice, you've got to get, you've got to have the police, you've got to have correctional services, and you've got to have health. You've probably got to have social development. And we've done that. It's been done in different ways for youth society. The committee, when it had the other long name, used to focus on HIV, gender-based violence, and employment or poverty. And so all of those were problems rather than particular departments. Focus can be expenditure versus revenue. And expenditure is usually the thing that is chosen for revenue, very small proportion paid tax. We've done a bit of work with banks and so on, but expenditure is what makes sense to people in terms of service. Yeah.
Sorry. In terms of our rights,
okay. current versus development is not an issue in South Africa. This is in some other countries they have their budget split into two, and it's often when they're very donor dependent, most of the donor money goes into the development budget. Level, national, provincial versus district or local. And with you sitting here, you have a difficulty in some of the areas because if you look at health or educational or social development, it's very difficult sitting in the national parliament because most of the delivery is happening in the provinces.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also partly why I chose the Department of Labour today, because the Department of Labour, the budget is all national. Timing, do you do post-budget analysis, which is what we're going to do today, or do all monitoring of the budget as it's implemented, or do you try and get in when the budget is being formulated, which is what you would have done if you got involved with the But we have examples of all of this, except for apparent words of prevention in parliamentary, which makes it more confusing, but it also means you have more choice. Okay. The last one is just what will it do for you? It will improve accountability, it will improve efficiency, it will improve transparency, it will improve participation. But the real benefit is that it might make things better for people on the ground. Are there, we late, I spoke too long. Are there any quick questions, or should we rather go for tea?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the questions I suspect you have will be answered as we go forward doing the exercises. This really was to give you what maybe we could call theory, and then the rest is you're actually going to engage. Any desperate questions?
Thank you.